Andrea Kane is our guest today. Andrea, welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure.
First, could you tell our listeners a little bit about your newest novel, Twisted?
I would say that it's about two FBI agents, a male and a female, although she technically is on leave of absence, if you want to look at it that way, a medical mandate, because she's injured herself in the line of duty. And each of them is following a separate case. She's following the case of a missing friend who she's desperate to find because she's been gone for a year. And her friend's parents are pretty frantic because the FBI and the police have more or less labeled this a cold case. And the male FBI agent is investigating an Asian organized crime case, which involves murdered prostitutes and all kinds of other very gross things. And unfortunately, they have had a very combustible relationship in the past and a very unpleasant parting, and they are not planning on joining back together again, but it turns out that the two cases dovetail, and they find themselves back together working a case with a very dark and very sinister and very awful, people have described it as Hannibal Lecter without eating people, villain here, a serial killer.
Well, how did you get started writing fiction?
Oh, that's a tough question, because I've been writing all my life, so I think that starting writing fiction for me became the question of what ifs. My whole life, I've always what ifs, you know, what if you crossed that street 10 seconds sooner, you know, if there was a car accident, what would have happened if? And being that I've always been really entrenched in suspense anyway, I mean, even when I was a little girl, I was a Nancy Drew fanatic, and I went on and on from there. I think that that was always my fascination, and I think that fiction is a wonderful thing to offer to the world, especially right now when it's such a very difficult world with so many things. I get an awful lot of response that says we're in a very dark world, whether it's from the recession or from the war or all the other, even the day-to-day things. It's so great to just sort of collapse at night with a fabulous book and just sort of take myself away from the real world and read something that not only is hopefully exciting, interesting, and keeps people at the edge of their seats, but also I'm a big believer in equity. I kind of don't see it in real life a lot. It's kind of nice to give people that equity in the book.
Could you also, I noticed on your website doing the research, that you have written several books in different series. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about some of your earlier works?
Sure. Actually, when I first started publishing fiction, what I was writing was what I would call historical romantic suspense, which were more the same. It was the same level of suspense, but they were set in historical time periods, which I really enjoyed doing. And then what happened was I knew. I mean, I don't know how else to say it except that there's sort of like this little instinct inside a writer. Maybe it's a muse. Maybe it's, I don't know, which just says it's time to move on. And I moved on to the contemporary realm, and then they became much more thriller-oriented, much more present-day-oriented, and the characters evolved into much more, I think, probably contemporary in the sense of not only that they're people that you would see on the streets, but also they have very complex lives, careers, the baggage that we all carry with us as, you know, as life and times have changed, because so many things were simpler then, although I always tell people that the one most wonderful thing about moving from historical contemporary is that when a body hits the floor, you find a dead body, you actually can go to a telephone and call 911, where I used to have people send missives by horse and things like that, you know, messengers riding through the streets. It's kind of nice that to be able to have a cell phone or a phone and call it in. But the series aspect of it, I carried in both. I did a couple of different series when I was writing historicals because I would have spin-offs of characters that just were really appealing. And I did the same thing when I switched to contemporary. When I wrote just previous to Twisted, I had Wrong Place, Wrong Time, and then Dark Room, which were both they both involved a police detective that was turned PI because he retired from the NYPD and became a private investigator. And his family is heavily involved in both books, and he's now as a PI investigating different cases. But when I first started writing Wrong Place, Wrong Time, I didn't anticipate him being such a prominent figure, and he just really took on a life of his own, and he became a lot of people's favorite characters, even though technically he wasn't the protagonist, he was in and unto himself. So he sort of commanded a repeat performance, and the whole family commanded a repeat performance. So I just spun it off with a different protagonist in terms of a different one of his children. Was the protagonist in Dark Room, and then from there he could make his reappearance investigating the case. So I think what it gives both me and the readers is the joy of bringing back some beloved characters who, you know, who actually are not necessarily the protagonist but a secondary character to the previous book, and can then either have their own book or just then come in as a similar character as they were in the previous book, but just as strong and powerful, and as I said, bring back old friends, if you want to look at it that way.
And I noticed that you also do a lot of research, because you said you want their fiction books, but you want everything to be factually correct as possible. How did you do research for your historical stuff?
Actually, the historical stuff in some ways is easier to do research for, because all of the people that you could talk to are dead. So you have to, that makes you rely entirely upon, you know, the written word. And I could go to libraries, I could go on the internet, I could get, you know, books that were written about the time periods and really be able to immerse myself in that without having to do, I mean, now my research is so extensive because I have to go to, first of all, in order to write a character, where I need to write a character, I have to understand everything about them. So, for example, in Twisted, I have spent more months with the FBI than I can even count. I mean, it was like a year, and I'm still doing it, because Twisted has a spinoff that I'm working on now. It's a sequel that's carrying the same male-female FBI agents. So I'm still with the FBI. I just got back from Quantico, as a matter of fact, because I just did another tour of duty, so to speak, as well as a signing for Twisted. So I have to learn how they think, how they operate, what would this person do? I mean, my female protagonist was a crisis negotiator. What does a person do under those circumstances? How would they act? And also, she was injured in a pretty gruesome way in terms of her hands being slashed, so she wasn't able to fire her weapon, which is why she left the Bureau temporarily, and because eventually she will go back. But I had to work with hand surgeons, and I had to work with hand therapists, so that I could understand exactly which tendons and which nerves and everything would be affected so that she couldn't shoot. And then after that, I had to learn how to shoot so that I could actually see what kind of pressure was necessary to exert to fire the Glock 22, what kind of aim was necessary in order not to, because I mean, if you wobble even just a little bit, you miss your target completely. And these people don't just take one shot. They have to be able to take multiple shots from all kinds of positions, and even when they're injured badly, they have to be able to shoot. So, you know, that's just one example, you know, and then learning the whole medical profession, which I'm not educated in, but I certainly am now. I learned new careers with each book. So the FBI aspect of it was one career, but when I, and previously to that, I had to go out with the NYPD, and I had to learn everything I did there, learn all the police work. But with Twisted alone, I had to learn so much medical stuff. I had to learn all the different aspects of the FBI and how they functioned. And then in each FBI situation, I had to go and learn what each different squad would do. I went to different field offices to see what they would do. It's kind of, let's put it this way, it's an incredible, incredible challenge. It takes months and months, which is why I keep explaining to my readers I can only produce one book a year because I'm an unbelievable perfectionist, and unless I get it dead on, I won't do it. And on top of that, it's also the most wonderful thing in the world for me because I get to learn so much, and each book opens up all these wonderful new doors of learning for me. So I'm really lucky because I get to work with some amazing consultants who teach me so much about so many. You know, with Darkroom, I learned all that photojournalism and image enhancing, and I'm one of those people who can't even focus a camera, so I had to learn from scratch so much. So those are some of the things that are extremely challenging, but at the same time extremely rewarding. And the best part is when I get emails from people in those fields who say, this is incredibly accurate, and thank you so much because I'm in that field, and no one ever does this that way. No one ever really takes the time to do that, which isn't to say there aren't a lot of authors who do, but still, it's very gratifying to hear that it's respected by the people who actually are either in law enforcement, in medicine, in whatever field I'm working in, where they notice the attention that I may pay to detail that maybe is even, you know, over and above, but for me it's so necessary.
How on earth were you able to insert yourself into Quantico? What kind of procedure or did it take to allow them to let you come to their campus and train with them?
What I did is I started at the very beginning the same way everybody else does. I started with, you know, headquarters, and I began with the, you know, public affairs at headquarters with the people that are official contacts. They're the contacts at every media, you know, from news, you know, CNN or Fox News or, you know, whatever television show it is to, you know, the written media would contact. And then from there, they put me, I was so lucky, they put me in touch with some of the best people, and I started at headquarters. And then from them putting me in touch with people there, they put me in touch from there with all the people that I needed. So they read so much of my synopsis, and they read so much of what I was going to do, and they put me in touch with all the right people and all the right field offices, and then eventually arranged my trip down to Quantico. I mean, I'm sure that I was heavily investigated, and God knows they probably know everything about me because they're extremely careful. And obviously in today's world, you have to be more than careful. And still, when I go down there, I'm very, I mean, if you think the airport puts you through a great deal of strip searching, so to speak, it's even more intensive there, because they have to worry about not only weapons and explosives, they have to also worry about things like cameras and tape recorders, because they don't want anything, you know, anything that's even remotely classified reflected in, you know, in the writing. I think it helped that I was writing fiction and that I really wanted to write something that was extremely positive about the FBI, which is a lot different than, you know, going down there like I want to scoop the next story and I don't care what I have to do. I certainly was not interested in endangering our country in any way, so if I did come across something that was even borderline classified, I ran everything by them before I put it in print. And then after I wrote the book, before it was even released to anybody, when it was still in manuscript form, before it even went into the advanced reading copies, I sent all the manuscripts down, and everybody who helped me, from the behavioral analysis unit, to the crisis negotiating unit, to the various members of the field offices, and then, you know, actually headquarters itself, they read it, and they made all of their comments, good, bad, or indifferent, but the most important thing was they checked it for authenticity. Anything that wasn't 100% authentic was changed, so, you know, that I could make it as dead on as I could. Quantico is such an awesome place, and I probably am asked about that more than anything else. People say, what is Quantico like? Because I think everybody, after watching TV, thinks of it as, it's kind of like Emerald City in The Wizard of Oz. It's this feeling of that place out there where, well, the FBI agents train and become, and it is. I mean, when people ask me, is it as awesome as we think? Yes, it is. It's absolutely awesome. The only difference is it doesn't have the bells and whistles that you see in Hollywood, because they have to do that to, you know, obviously attract an audience in a very short period of time. You know, the average FBI case is usually researched over years and years and followed so that they can present it to the proper judicial channel so that they can be prosecuted, because otherwise, clearly, they're not going to get their man, so to speak. But on TV, you can't have somebody going through the investigative process for 2 years, so they accelerate it. But, you know, and you get things like questions such as, where is that building where they, you know, where in New York City where they investigate all the missing people? There is no building in New York City where they investigate only the missing people. There's one field office where they have squads that do that, certainly. But I always say to people, do you know what the real estate taxes are in New York? Can you imagine in Manhattan having a building, a beautiful glass building where they only investigate missing persons? I mean, I really would love to have it, because I've never met more dedicated people in my life than I met at the FBI. They are an incredible bunch of people who come from the most diverse backgrounds I've ever seen. Some of them come from previous law enforcement. Some of them come from the military. And then a lot of them come from they were attorneys. They were accountants. They speak seven or eight foreign languages. They come from so many different walks of life, and I think that's probably what makes them not only so interesting, but so effective, because they each are utilized for the talents that they can contribute to the agency.
Are there any authors, either current or past, that you've read or heard of that have influenced your writing?
I read so much. I should say I've read so much in terms of different authors, and unfortunately now I don't read as much as I used to because I'm usually writing most of the time. But in terms of suspense, even though we write very differently, I think that the first suspense author that I can remember as an adult, I mean, not counting all the stuff that I read as a child, which was always, I mean, and forever, I would say that when I started reading Robert Ludlum, I remember that was when I first started thinking, this is awesome. And I remember thinking, this guy's got to have had access that's unprecedented because it's so authentic and it rings so true. And I never understood, you know, how do you get that kind of access? It's a lot of hard work. I mean, I'm sure he had a lot of, I mean, I never have spoken with him directly, but, and unfortunately now he's not here to speak with, but he was probably the first person that I read where I thought, this is unbelievably edge of your seat and at the same time so intricately plotted and so brilliantly executed through real channels, clearly real channels, that he had to have done a lot of inside research. And I think that that made me start thinking, if I ever did this, I would have to do it that way. I wasn't so much planning an FBI book or any one kind of book. I just knew that suspense was in my blood and it had to be a thriller. It had to be. And I love the psychology of the human mind. When people ask me what kind of thrillers I write, I usually say psychological thrillers because antagonists, you know, villains, so to speak, are not crazy lunatics that just run around killing people. They all have methods to their madness. Some, I mean, yeah, there's some sociopaths, but they're also, most of them, heroes in their own mind because there is rationale behind it. Whether it's baggage that created them, it's still, you need, I spend as much time, sometimes more, creating a plausible antagonist as I do creating plausible protagonists. Because that's what makes them so frightening. They're not just, you know, these scary people that show up and they kill people. That's not real, and especially to today's sophisticated reader, that's not going to create something that makes them really excited throughout the book and also makes them try to guess. That's the best part, having them write to me and say, I didn't figure it out until it hit me between the eyes in the second to last chapter. You can't have Uncle So-and-so who you don't meet through the whole book and then you find out he's the killer. It has to be somebody who's buried in the book and who's there, but who doesn't jump out at you as the clear and obvious killer. And then when it does, it's got to be really, hopefully, you know, a hit between the eyes where it really is. And on the other hand, sometimes it can be someone from page one where the reader knows, but the protagonist doesn't. And that can be really suspenseful, too, because it's that feeling where the reader wants to constantly scream out, look out, because they know, but the protagonist doesn't. It's kind of that thing, like if you watch television, you'll see, you know someone is hiding in the house, but the person who comes home doesn't, and you want to scream out, don't open your door, don't go in there because someone with a knife is going to kill you. But obviously you don't, you can't. And it's that, you know, it's that exciting feeling of, you know, is he going to get them? Is he not going to get them? It's, you know, it's all tied together in the kind of thriller it plays out. Each one's different. There isn't a serial, like, you know, Twisted happens to have a really deranged serial killer here, but some of my novels don't have that at all. I mean, they'll have a much more psychologically subtle approach, maybe even somebody who's, you know, close in a different way to one of the protagonists, and that's why they're in danger, because they don't distrust this person, even though they're intelligent.
Do you think Ludlum had unlimited access, or do you think he wrote from first-hand knowledge?
I know, I vacillated. There were times that I thought that maybe he had first-hand knowledge, and then there were times that I think thought he had, I think it was probably a combination of both. I mean, again, this is speculation on my part, being that I didn't have, never had the opportunity, unfortunately, to ask him, but not that I'm sure he would have been able to tell me, because a lot of what I do, I can't even say, so, and I don't have, you know, first-hand knowledge in the sense that I was ever an FBI agent myself, so I can't say that, but I can say that I was part of things. You know, when I went, one of the times that I went down to Quantico, I was allowed the access of actually watching. I didn't participate as an agent, but I was there physically moving with them as they did crisis negotiating training, and I watched them train new agents who were taking this on as an ancillary responsibility, learn how to become a crisis negotiator. And they literally, because they have Hogan's Alley, which is a fictitious town, but it is real, they set it up as a real town with a bank and a movie theater and a restaurant. I mean, when you're in there, you feel like you're in a living, breathing town. And they set it up so that they can create scenarios where they teach their agents how to participate in various different, you know, maneuvers. And I was in those, and they set up three separate scenarios where, you know, from a barricade to a kidnapping, those kinds of things, where the crisis negotiators were unaware of what they would, I mean, the trainees were unaware of what they were going to encounter. And I went with them, and I watched as they were doing what they were doing as if it were a real situation. And I obviously can't relay certain things that I saw, but it was unbelievable to watch the way they did it. It was unbelievable to watch the way, how brilliant they were as they learned and as they already knew how to perform, because some of it is instinctual. And some of it is just, as I said, there's classified, I believe they call it either ultra-classified or there's a higher level of classified, and then there's that there's obviously open things that they can reveal. And then there's things that, as a writer, for me, are borderline, where I would think to myself, well, it's kind of like where you see on television, on TV news, you'll see a reporter reporting a bank robbery in progress, and you think to yourself, well, if the reporter is saying, at this very moment, SWAT is surrounding the building, and there's a sniper on this in this building ready to take out this guy, and you're thinking, well, at least I'm thinking, and I'm sure many other intelligent people are thinking, don't you think that guy in there has a TV? if you're reporting this as it's happening, as a top secret operation that's going on to rescue these people, well, you're sort of telling people what they want to hear, but at the same time you're telling the gun holder what he wants to hear, and he knows exactly what's going on. So it's those, you know, were things that I did not want to do. So I would ask, you know, what do you think is, and then they would tell me, honestly. And as I built rapport with them, they were more willing to work with me. And it's unbelievable. As I said, I don't think I've ever had anything so fascinating, especially when I was with, like, the crisis negotiators and the behavioral analysis unit. Because that's, watching them develop profiles is just really unbelievable. The things that they use for their statistical analysis, it's not just that they're handed, usually people are this, this, or this. They base it on an incredible number of criteria when they're approached by law enforcement and they're needed. I go back to them repeatedly, because I do think that psychology plays into every aspect of everything anyone does. So the human mind is a fascinating thing, and I learn from them every single time.
Have any of your books been optioned by Hollywood?
I know that there's always talk about it. I don't know whether, you know, I leave a lot of things in the hands of my agent, and my agent perpetually tells me, and she's right, being that I'm the perfectionist that I am, that even when they make any of my books into movies, I will have to be duct taped and thrown in a closet, because I will have to stay for the duration, because I will never either be able to be quiet while they're casting or while they're plotting and they have to redo things. It wouldn't work. I'll just have to see it as a finished product and clap at the end, because I would never be able to just sit back and be quiet. So I guess I'll have to be duct taped at that point, and everyone will know that one of my books is being movie-ized, so to speak.
Well, we are just about out of time today, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to have the interview with us.
Oh, it was my pleasure, and I'm sorry we didn't have more time, because I would have happily answered anything else that you would have. I know there's always questions that come up, and I would have been happy to answer them, but I do know that we're all on a tight time schedule, including you, so it was my pleasure to do that.
Well, thank you very much, and have a good weekend.
And I wish you the same.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.